Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and this is the show that I like to say seeks to answer questions, large and small. We're here with you every Tuesday at lunchtime. Thank you for listening. Today's question is a really big one. The question is, how can geography help us solve some of the biggest problems our planet faces right now? And I have with me two gentlemen who have been working on that question. They are Greg Wessel, president and founder of a group called Geology in the Public Interest. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you.
And Jeff Greenberg, who is the vice president of Geology in the Public Interest. And I'd just like to read for our audience your mission statement, because I'm sure they're saying, what can geology do to help us out? The statement of Geology in the Public Interest, the mission statement, is to identify situations where the judicious application of geologic expertise can solve environmental and social problems, and to apply geoscience and engineering as part of a wider effort both to create sustainable economic activities and to restore and protect the environment. How the heck do you do that?
Well, is that a question?
That is a question, yes.
So actually, geologists are at the grassroots of global development everywhere. We are involved in everything that has any kind of supportive role for society. For instance, agricultural production, we worry about soils and sustainable agricultural production. We worry about water availability, and that's what we do here on Vashon and everywhere. We also worry about minerals availability and, of course, energy. So when you're looking at the problems that affect mankind now across the board and across borders, at root, there's always a geologic input. So geoscientists are very important.
Jeff, how would you answer that question?
Well, I think Greg did a pretty good deal with that. There's a lot of components that we're involved in when we talk about geology. Some people would call it earth science, but it encompasses a great deal of things. Everything involved with the land, the air, and the waters, and probably anything this side of the of space on the planet. And you think of all the problems we have today. You think of the major issues that are resource oriented, as Greg mentioned, but natural hazards, earthquakes, volcanoes, tsunamis, landslides, like you have there in Washington State, that have become such a big deal. And geologists are really at the heart of planning and design for using our intelligence to do things right with the land, instead of just to rush in and think about human profit motive without using intelligence. So it's applying the things that we understand about all of nature and all of the earth to use it, to study it, to do a better job with it at high levels in government and all the way down to the grassroots levels in small communities across the globe.
That is really interesting. I'm wondering how the two of you managed, number one, to find each other, and number two, to develop this concept of an organization, the one that you have, Geology in the Public Interest. How did you find each other, and how did you develop this idea?
That's really two questions. Mm-hmm. The organization existed before Jeff and I met, or was formed about the same time, but we really didn't meet through that. We met through doing sessions, chairing sessions at the Geological Society of America annual meeting a few years ago. And we had both proposed and were at the meeting chairing these sessions when we realized that we had basically proposed sessions that were almost identical and very similar in topic. And so we got together and said, you know, we should just do one together next time, because it seems like we have a lot of common interest. And so we did that. And as a result, then we also started working on a special paper, which is actually a big book, for the Geological Society of America that was published a couple of years ago. It's about 600 pages, I think, and took us a lot of time, but it was a product of both of us, of Jeff from Wheaton and me from Geology in the Public Interest. Jeff and I have been doing this for quite a while, and just recently, actually, we wanted to do something a little bit more formal together. especially since I know he's going to have a whole lot of time the next year or so.
Well, I'm curious how I, as the layperson, am looking at geology and geology in the public interest, and I know you both mentioned that geologists really do touch on a lot of the problems that we're having on the planet because you're aware of resources. What examples can you give me of how your geologic expertise might inform some of the decisions we're making about, say, the environment?
Oh, Jeff, that's a good one for you with your students' work.
Oh, thanks. That's a good lead-in, Greg. Thank you. Yeah, my thing that I was doing here before I met Greg really was as a professor at Wheaton College, and Wheaton is a Christian school, and I mean that in a good sense, not the political sense these days, but with a lot of highly motivated students who really want to make a difference in the world and who are thinking more of others than they are themselves. And so they've sort of demanded that we find things for them to be able to apply the science of the earth, in doing good things for people across the globe. And I've been working with students, undergraduate students, in Haiti, in Tanzania, South Africa, Kosovo, in Eastern Europe, and several other places as well. We have an operation starting up in Mexico, Bolivia. And the idea, again, is to train people to do the science of the earth, but to do it in such a way that it helps others, helps people. We're not just talking about tree hugging, but we're talking about things, resource things that are very close to people's hearts. So that's what I got started in before I ever met Greg, and have had an opportunity to publish papers, go to meetings with students for them to build up their own background, but also to hook them into wanting to do good things with the science, as opposed to what some people might think geology is, just, you know, oil and fossil fuels and raping and pillaging the land. That's not it. As a matter of fact, we're very interested in just the opposite of that.
So, Jeff, give us an example of one of those good things. What exactly would it be?
Well, for instance, in Kosovo, a village that was part of the terrible genocide that went on there back about in the 1990s between mm-hmm. Serbia and the Albanian Kosovars. And the U.S. came in there after a lot of bad things were done, and communities were left with contaminated drinking water systems, wells that were just terrible, making people sick. So we came in, and the students actually helped to rehabilitate the wells. We helped people discover areas where they could tap spring water and maybe drill for underground water of decent quality. So we used the science to help people with water and sanitation, and that's still a major interest.
What sort of projects do you have planned for the future? I'm interested, particularly, you said you had worked in Haiti, and I always think of Haiti as the country that the world forgot.
It's a rough place. It really is. We have Wheaton College has an association with a small university in northern Haiti. We want to help them, particularly with sanitation and agriculture, and using the water that most people think of as sewage, killing the microbes in that water naturally, then using the water's nutrients to help them with their agriculture so they don't have to buy fertilizer. And this is sort of ongoing. We may do something similar to that in Baja, Mexico, under a different environmental type of conditions.
That's very creative and inventive. And did your students come up with this as a collaborative group, or was this someone's brilliant idea?
Well, actually, it's other people coming to us and inviting us in. People, particularly some of the religious groups in different countries who know people's needs, have come to us and said, we know you guys like to do this sort of thing, so would you be willing to spend some time supervising students doing surveys and land use planning to help us with our conditions?
That's fascinating. Greg Wessel, you have been working in geology your entire life here in the Pacific Northwest, and I understand that you've worked on mapping for landslide threats.
Right.
Where have you done that, and how able are you really to prevent loss of life, loss of property with this kind of mapping?
Well, actually, I've only been here in the Northwest for the last 20 years or so.
Oh, gosh.
I'd like to say I'm that young, I'm not. The hazard issue, as Jeff pointed out too, is something that geologists are very active in right now, and it is largely philanthropic type of work in that you can't make money mapping hazards, but it is has incredible. It's a public interest and very, very much in the common good to work for that. So I spent a lot of time here as a county employee. I retired from the county last fall, mapping landslide hazards in King County alone, and in trying to coordinate that with the zoning code for the purposes of regulating construction and making sure that people are safe when they build something. That's something that happens in a lot of places. A lot of municipalities and county governments don't have the money to do that necessarily. And even in the state of Washington here, with the fact that we have some huge landslides and some very destructive ones, and of course the Oso event, there are still counties that don't have enough money to deal with it. And the state has been struggling with their program and trying to make sure that they have enough money to do it. And they've been pretty successful so far. But it's something that doesn't, that gets a lot of interest right after a big event. And then a couple of years later, people have forgotten about it. So that's something that we also are looking at doing some work with geology and public interest, because we have those talents here. One of our board members is also retired from the county, John Bethel. He was the one who did a lot of the mapping for DNRP, for King County DNRP. And I worked with him on the mapping that I did for the permitting department. So,
was that landslide mapping?
Yes, it was.
What about earthquake faults? I mean, we're pretty nervous about earthquakes here in the Northwest. I'm kind of surprised that neither the state nor the county has made that a budget priority.
Well, there's a lot of interest in seismic modeling and in trying to make sure that the building codes are consistent with the type of hazard that you're likely to encounter with seismic events. Mapping the faults is another thing. And the state does have a program doing surface geologic mapping. It's fairly limited in the sense that they get a certain amount of money every year, and they do two or three quadrangles every year. But they've got it planned out over a long period of time, and they've been doing this for quite a long time too. The trick with the faults around here, though, is that they're kind of all hidden. It's hard to find an exposed fault trace, partly because the erosion rates are so high that they don't last very long in glacial strata, and also because there's so many trees. If we could just get rid of all the vegetation, I tell everybody, then we'd be fine. But, you know, you can't really see through that very well.
You know, and here's where my ignorance comes in, because I was thinking you had, like, X-rays or Geiger counters or something that would help you find these things beneath the earth. But you have to have a visual sign on top of the earth?
No, you don't. There are ways you can image those. That you can do subsurface investigations with I guess in the oil industry, it would be a seismic study, basically. You'd be looking at doing profiles using an array of geophones on the surface and a power source to generate. You're basically generating a small earthquake that you're then measuring reflections at depth, and you can actually image some fault traces that way. It's been done. The other thing you can do is, with the LIDAR information that we have now, you can look for very subtle topographic changes that indicate offset at the surface. But part of the problem is, too, is that a lot of the faults that create earthquakes but don't necessarily come to the surface. You don't see that dislocation at the surface that you might expect with every one.
Pretty hard to predict.
It is very hard to predict. And again, lots of times you can determine about where the fault break is, but not exactly where it is. So it's hard to say that it comes at the surface right under your house. It's very rare. The Seattle fault, there's some traces of that are known precisely on the surface. But for the most part, the faults in Western Washington are a bit hidden.
You're listening to Real Talk at 101.9 FM KVSHO Vashon Island, Washington. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and I am here with Greg Wessel, president and founder of Geology in the Public Interest, and Jeff Greenberg, who's talking to us from Wheaton, Illinois. He's vice president of Geology in the Public Interest. We can do this thanks to Windermere Vashon Real Estate, who supports all our community information programming and makes our emergency alert service possible. You guys have kind of an interesting window on the world as geologists. When you get together, what sorts of things might you be predicting or afraid of or looking for in the planet?
Well, that's a good question. The first thing I thought of was, well, we do a lot of talking and we drink a bit of beer.
you thought of beer too?
I know.
Sorry.
It's not that bad, really.
That's what we do when we get together, though. It loosens us up a little bit.
Feeds the creative process.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I don't know that we worry about much. I think these days, with the way the government's going, a lot of us worry about funding. But I think we probably, and Jeff, correct me here, I think we really enjoy sharing our experiences and talking about rocks and what we saw in the field. And I think probably the best day ever is when you can go out in the woods and spend all day getting sweaty and picking up stuff and loading up your pack with rocks, and then coming back and over a beer, sit down with the other geologists and say, look, here's what I got. And you spend a couple of hours doing that.
What do those rocks tell you?
Well, it depends on what you're looking for, usually, you know, the people who do that most often are the ones who do exploration, so the prospectors, people in the mineral industry in particular, not the oil field folks so much, but the mining company and exploration companies, and then people are doing mapping and studying in rocks, just doing the surface geology, the mapping. For a while, I was involved with the state, the Washington State's group that's doing that through the Department of Natural Resources, and we went spent some evenings like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a profession that gives you a kind of a unique view of the planet. Of course, I shouldn't say it's so unique because there are a lot of different kinds of geoscientists out there, and they all pretty much share the same view.
I would agree with that. I'd add to it that there's this sort of sense of awe and love when we're looking at all of the variety, and another way to look at rocks is to think of them as little history books. The really amazing thing that you can pick up a rock with fossils in it or certain minerals in it, and it has this story to tell. The rocks tell stories, and geologists, when we get really kind of sentimental about the whole thing after a couple of years, or even before, we start getting in there and we realize again what we've learned about the story of the Earth that comes through this. Sometimes it's that story that warns us about something, about hazards. Sometimes it's telling us that maybe there's some goodies, some resources here. But even just a marvel to know that an area that was glacier at one point is now desert, and that mountains are, you know, pushed up and then brought low. So there's a lot of excitement, and I really should mention that one of my areas of, I mentioned working with students, I'm really invested in getting more young people into the geosciences because of not only the enjoyment, but because of the sort of the ministry of doing what we're doing to help other people in the world is so important. And young people are the ones that can get the excitement that we have about all this wonder in nature and then do something about it.
You know, gosh, you're bringing all kinds of questions to my mind. One of them is, what involvement, if any, have you had with the volcanic eruption of Kilauea in Hawaii? Was there any way to predict that? Is there any way that you can look at that and say where it's going to go, what's going to happen, why it erupted now?
Part of my background is what we call igneous petrology, so I study rocks that are magmatic. And I've also been out, I've taught 9 different times out on the Big Island of Hawaii, and we take students out and we'll visit. But we know that that's an active volcano. We know that, number one, it's more approachable than other volcanoes because of its chemistry and its type. But even then, it's a volcano. It's almost like a big living beast. And the people that build there do so really without thinking a whole lot. Well, it's this beautiful country. It's cheaper down here. Well, it's cheaper because you're in the flow direction right. of these lavas. And so it's unfortunate to see it. It's not the kind of disaster that's going to wipe out 100,000 people in one explosion, but it's still sort of a shame to see people that will not live with nature and live with it appropriately, because that is a dangerous dynamic feature that really should be respected. What do you think, Greg?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's true when you look at floodplains and other geologic hazards. The Oso Slide was an example of that. You have a lot of people who are very willing to live in areas that are hazardous, and sometimes you can't tell just how hazardous they are. In fact, many times you can't. Other floodplains, that's not true. You're measured. You know where the 100-year flood is going to go. But people are still willing and happy to live there, and people have kind of a short memory. They think, well, I haven't seen anything happen around here in 20 years, so it's fine. You go, well, it happens every 100 years.
And that's a blink of an eye.
And that's right. Yeah. Geologically, that's nothing. So that's one of the challenges, actually, that the county here has in regulating development, because you have to look at a house as having a lifespan of 75 or 100 years. So when people say, hey, I've been here 10 years and everything's fine, you go, yeah, that's great. But that's not quite, it doesn't quite cut it,
So do you try to counsel zoning organizations and find that your counsel falls on deaf ears with developers around? Or?
Well, we actually haven't done a lot of that yet. I've written a couple of blog pieces for Metropolitan Research, or I'm sorry, Municipal Research Services Center, MRSC, here in town, and that was they were well received. It was about regulating geologic hazards. I don't think anybody argues with a geologist when they say, there's a landslide there. You don't argue with that. And if you can show and people understand that that's an issue, they go, oh yeah, that's right. They'll argue with other zoning regulations, and I could. I have a long list of those people argue with, but they never argue with the geologic ones.
Oh.
So it's pretty interesting that to be able to do that work and to be able to provide that value to the public is quite rewarding, really.
Yeah,
I would think so. So in the process of your careers, and both of you are sort of shutting down your professional careers as geologists, Greg, you wrote a wonderful article in our local newspaper about retirement is the time when you do what you really want to do. So I'd like to hear from each of you, what during your careers was capturing your passion and saying to you, this is what I want to do when I can do whatever I want? Greg Wessel.
So first, I'd like to take exception to the fact that we're shutting down our careers.
I knew you would.
Sounded good to me.
Yeah. I sometimes it does, too. Shutting down some portion of it, certainly. This is an argument I made in that newspaper article, which is really way I think, is that, you spend a lot of your life doing things that for other people and things for the company and things for whoever is paying you. That makes no sense at all, and that you sit there and you just get frustrated and you keep going to work because you've got to get the kids through college and you've got to do all these things. It's like, okay, look, if you really had the chance and really had the ability to sit back and do something that you felt was good, well, all you have to do is open your eyes and look out there and see there's so much work to do. There's so much good work to do. Mm-hmm. It's overwhelming how much work there is to do. And especially with results, with the last year and a half or so of politics, what's going on, it's getting worse. There's more work to do.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge is, find something and fix it. And it's easy. All you have to do is open your eyes. And a lot of things to fix. Well, that's really what I think kept me going all those years, was the idea that, you know, I like doing this work for the oil company, or I like doing this work for the mining company. I enjoy treasure hunting, so exploration was a natural for me. But at the same time, I was kind of afraid I might find something. So that, you know, you don't want to necessarily be responsible for creating a great big new polluting mine or something. You know, you'd like to do that in a way that it's not. Mind you, those things are valuable to society. Everybody has a car. Everybody drives. Everybody has a house, right? Those are made from things. But the way you do it is what's important to me. So now I think spending my time on developing that idea more fully is where I want to go.
So that was the thing you found that you want to fix.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jeff Greenberg, what about you?
I've been at Wheaton College now for 32 years, mostly teaching. And I love teaching, but after a while, it's a lot of hard work grading. So I'm kind of glad not to. And so my retirement is to maybe eliminate so much teaching, but continue mentoring younger people and realizing again that they've got such potential to do good things, and hopefully that helps steer them away from things that they're just going to make money or make them famous, either academically or in industry, but to try to do things that are going to be useful. I was at the University of Wisconsin 8.5 years before I came to Wheaton, and I worked for the State Geological Survey, similar to what Greg was doing, and a lot of public service kind of work. Consulting with stuff like that now would be good, but I really want to continue doing these international projects with students, and particularly putting them into the situation where they gain a lot of experience and become useful.
So the two of you, Greg Wessel and Jeff Greenberg, are retiring from working for the other guys, and identified your passions, and out of that, it sounds like you created Geology in the Public Interest.
I think that's right. Yeah, essentially that's true. I think Jeff is not, you know, Jeff and I have been working together for a couple of years, but he's new to the organization. But I think that his input will be critical in taking us forward, especially this next year through the meeting that we're working on.
So tell us about that. What is your focus for the coming year?
So we put together a proposal for a meeting originally with the Geological Society of America, and we ended up instead with the Geological Society of America, but also with the American Geophysical Union. And this is a meeting that's now has 10 co-sponsors. I think that's right. I seem to lose track, but we picked up another one when we established a new venue in Stockholm. This is a meeting. The title of the meeting is Geoscience and Society Summit, Bridges to Global Health, Resilience, and Sustainability. And the idea is to bring people together from a variety of different places and different organizations, foundations, government agencies, academia, other nonprofits, and get them all together and say, look, how can we address these issues, these big problems for society? And by society, I mean the entire world, these problems that cross borders, whether it's environmental degradation or resource availability or water availability, how can we address these more efficiently by trying to build some bridges across these borders that we've created? And these borders are not just geographic borders or national borders or political borders, but religious borders, cultural borders, anything that prevents us from working together, anything that fragments society. And as you know, we have a lot of fragmentation going on here in the United States. It's probably more apparent here than it is anywhere else.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, a real challenge for us. How do we deal with that? Well, that's what we're starting to try to figure out to do. So the meeting that we proposed originally was going to be a smaller one. And as time gone on, it's actually gotten quite significantly larger, and so we're kind of overwhelmed by how successful it's been.
But victims of your own success.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
We've been talking on Real Talk with Greg Wessel and Jeff Greenberg, president and founder of Geology in the Public Interest, is Greg, and Jeff Greenberg is the vice president of Geology in the Public Interest. These gentlemen are hosting a major meeting in March of 2019 in Stockholm, Geoscience and Safety Summit, Bridges to Global Health, Resilience, and Sustainability, bringing a scientific, many scientific perspectives together to try and solve major global problems. My last question for you guys, and we only have a few seconds, is how do you think the world is going to take science seriously now when they haven't done so much in the past?
I just think it's so sad that, you know, twice now, 2 years in a row, we've been protesting to support science and women and truth and just general decency. I can't figure it. I can't figure out why we've gotten this way, because when you actually go out and talk to people, I don't think most people agree with that. That's the thing. Yet, you know, enough people voted for that, but I don't think they really did. I don't think they understood that.
Well, let's hope that the global society takes what you guys are doing seriously, and I want to thank you for doing it. And I want to thank you, listeners, for listening. This has been Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe.